Bush from San Leandro, and she came down to visit with us and help us with the fourth step. So welcome, Marilyn.
Thank you. You know, I kind of asked a few people, what is it that you want on this? And nobody said what they wanted. So I just kind of said, okay, it'll happen how it happens. My own personal opinion is that there's as many ways to do a four-step as there are people in this room. Everybody's going to find their own way to do it. I have opinions on what I think works best. When I came in, we didn't have a lot of the literature we have today. We did have this piece of literature, which is the Blueprint for Progress. My first four-step I did out of the Blueprint for Progress and talked to my sponsor about it. They are going to revise that. They were talking about it at the conference. The literature committee was just kind of talking about it, but I haven't seen anything in published form yet to tell me that it is going to be. There's a lot of Al-Anons who have used the four-step inventory for Alateen. That also works real well. But the thing that I find is the most helpful is this book right here, Paths to Recovery. And I have some evidence that it works because I happen to be one of those people who sponsor a lot of people. And it took me a few years to catch on to the fact that I need to limit the amount of people that I sponsor. And so now I only take on one new sponsor a year, and I've been doing that for over 10 years, but I still have a significant number of sponsees. But what happened when this book came out is we sat down and we talked about it. And each one of my sponsees, even though they had already completed a fourth step, went back and took a second look at it. And took a second look at it from the questions that were under the fourth step. And what I have seen happen since this book came out was I've seen a tremendous amount of recovery. Because this book is so thorough in the steps that if you do the first three steps out of this book, by the time you get to the point of being ready to do the first step, it's just absolutely amazing where you are. And I have watched people who are doing the fourth step this way, and even those that I don't sponsor that are sponsees of my sponsees, I can recognize when they're using this book because the recovery is so evident. You know, they've really gotten in and looked at themselves and been ready to really take a very thorough fourth step. One of my sponsees who has done the most thorough fourth step that I have ever seen done is speaking tonight. And I'm real hopeful that I make it back to San Leandro in time to be able to hear her speak. She's told me, don't you dare hurry back there. But the reality is the first time she's speaking, and I try to always be there when my sponsees are speaking for the first time. But getting back to the fourth step, I made some copies of what it says on the fourth step inventory out of the paths to recovery, because I didn't think everybody would have one. If you happen to have one in front of you, don't take one of the things, because I don't think I've made enough. I didn't think there would be this many people here. But what I have found in doing the step right out of the paths to recovery is that it has all of these questions that really prepare you to let go, really prepare you to look at yourself and recognize what your part is in any situation. I can remember when I first started getting into the fourth step, my feeling was, well, he's the one that did all the stuff. Why do I have to do this? And what I learned as I started to really look at this was that it didn't matter what anybody else in the world did. What mattered was how I felt about what I did. And what was important for me was to get in there and really take a thorough inventory about everything that I did. What I found in looking at myself was I found that during the days of active alcoholism, I was not a very nice person to almost anyone, because I was angry a good deal of the time. I was really angry at what he was doing, why he was doing it, and why he was doing it to me. And that's what I felt. But I had to come to the place of recognizing that alcoholism is a disease, and with alcoholism being a disease, he obviously did not do it to me. It was my reaction to what was going on. And I had a lot of reactions. Many of them were not very good reactions. To me, when I got to the place of being able to recognize what I was responsible for, I could really make a very thorough four-step. I have found that I've gone back and I've redone a four-step out of this book. And I have found that it was so much more thorough than when I did it out of the blueprint, because it really forced me to look at all of the areas of everything that I was doing and how willing I was really to look at what my part was in every situation. And when I did that first four step, it didn't ask me these questions. And when I looked at these questions and answered these questions honestly, what happened for me was I started really, really looking at what I had done in my first four step and recognized that there were a lot of things that I had left out, an awful lot of things. So by doing it in the second time, I was able to really see, okay, how willing was I to really be honest about all of these things. And what was standing in my way? Usually it was fear. And so for me, it was just really important that I go back and I really thoroughly look at each one of these questions and apply each one of them to my life. And really look at where I was respectful, where I was disrespectful. There were a lot of places that I was disrespectful. There were a lot of things that later on I would owe amends for that I didn't recognize as being wrong at all, because I was angry and I was justifying my existence. And today I don't have to do that. Today I don't have to do things to justify my existence. Today I can follow through on the commitments that I make, even if they arrive on my birthday, because I didn't realize that I committed to come down here on my birthday. And my family was real happy about that. And I said, look guys, I made the commitment, I'm following through, I'm going, we can celebrate my birthday before or after. And so they accepted that grudgingly, as did a number of my sponsees accept that grudgingly. So, you know, for me, what I have to recognize is when I make a commitment, I follow through on it. And if I can't follow through, I let people know well in advance or as much in advance as I possibly can. Earlier this week, I started coming down with colds, and so I went to bed and took care of myself so that I could still follow through on my commitment and hope that I didn't come down with a raging cold so I couldn't even talk. My throat is a little scratchy, but other than that, I can still do what I need to do. Are there any specific questions that any of you have about the fourth step? Anybody have any specific questions of things that you want to know about that I haven't said anything about yet? Yes, Mary.
Yeah. And how long does a normal course step have to be? I mean, I know it ends up being ongoing, but are you going over a month or over? I mean, you can go extensive, really, get really, really extensive over your whole life and go for a year to keep evaluating things and then keep going after that.
I think that your fourth step can be relatively quick. It doesn't have to take a year. A month is real good timing, providing you're going through and really answering these questions. When I sit down with someone who's doing their fourth step and we go over the things that they've written, there's a lot of other questions that I ask them. Well, how does this relate to this? And do you think maybe you want to look a little bit more deeply at this or, you know, whatever it is? And what I find is sometimes it takes 2 or 3 meetings to get all the way through the first step. It isn't a thing if they just sit down and rattle it off, you know. This is a give-and-take kind of conversation between sponsor and sponsee. And I think that it's really important that we do that and make sure that they're looking at all of the aspects. And oftentimes, I know my sponsees so well that I'm able to ask them questions that bring up other stuff, and they say, yeah, I need to write a little bit more about that. But usually, within 3 or 4 meetings, we get all the way through the fourth step. And so if you figure 1 meeting a week, that's a month. If they're only able to get to me twice a month, that's 2 months. So, you know, it just kind of depends. You can spend as much time as you want on a fourth step, or as least as you want. But if you want to do a real thorough fourth step, that means that you answer every question. You don't answer them yes and no, you answer them thoroughly as to what's going on inside of you and inside of your heart. The other thing, most of the people that I sponsor do is they have a binder. They set up a binder strictly for their fourth step. Some of them write it, some of them put it on the computer and print it out. Some of them put it on the computer and arrive with their laptop. You know, everybody does it the way that's going to be most comfortable for them. I suggest that they keep their fourth step because it's a very important document that tells them where they were when they did it. And they can go back and look at it later and see things that maybe they didn't cover. And, you know, when I did mine, I did the best I could the first time. And when this book came out and I redid it again, I found there was a lot of things that I didn't cover on the first one. And I had a larger awareness of who and what and where I was than I did when I did my first four step. And, you know, it's just really dependent on where you are. I personally believe that if you're going to do a very thorough fourth step, you have to first have completed the first 3 steps and completed them thoroughly. You know, everyone gets so hung up about the fourth step, that they forget that until they develop the willingness to let go of all of these other things in the first step and detached from the problem, they can't see what their part is. And I know that was very much for me. My sponsor was constantly working with me in the beginning about making sure that I completed 1, 2, and 3 before I went on. Getting off of 4, I was in the program maybe 4 months when I decided to go and make amends for some behaviors. And it didn't work out real well, and I went crying to my sponsor, and what she did was she reminded me that there were 8 steps before I hit that 9th step. And the same goes with the 4th step. To remember that there are 3 steps that precede the 4th step. So you need to do those steps first. And I think a lot of times we get real hung up about the fourth step and think, oh my God, I've got to get the fourth step done, and we forget about the first three. And for me, it is very important that I follow through on each of the 12 steps. And once I get to the 12 steps, doesn't mean I'm done. It's a constant re-going over the steps. I find that in working with my sponsees, wherever they are, it forces me to re-look at what I did on the steps that they're on at that time. And so I'm constantly re-looking at who and what I am. And as I go through that with other people, I find, oh, there's a little hole here and there's a little hole here. So then when I'm alone, I'm going back and doing some more work and going back to my sponsor again. And she looks at me and she says, I thought we finished with this. And I said, but I left this out. And that's the thing that I find happens with me on any step that I have worked. There's going to be some little thing that comes up that sparks me inside to recognize that there was something that was left out. It wasn't left out on purpose. It was where I was at that time, and I didn't have the ability to see it all right then. And so what I say is do it the best step you can, the best first step you can. Let go of it and move on. When you discover something else, you can go back and pick that up. Remember, there's a 10th step there. You know, where we continued to recognize where we made mistakes and what our behavior was, and go and make amends for that behavior. So there's other steps that can take care of it, and there's nothing wrong with doing more than one full step. I have known some people that have done four steps. And that's because they were where they were when they did the first one. And when they got a little more recovery and a little more healthy, they were able to see things they were not able to see when they did the first four step. But what's important is that you go ahead and you do them. You get them done. Start with one, work through. Any more questions? Yes?
Can you do a four step sponsor?
I wouldn't recommend it, because if you're taking a fourth step and you're not talking with someone who has some recovery behind them, if you're not talking to someone else, all you're doing is sitting there talking to yourself. And I can't see my defects. My sponsor can. They glare out to her. They don't glare out to me. Other questions? Yes?
One way to grow your audience.
There are several people who believe in the autobiography. I sat down and I did that work, and to me it wasn't as satisfying, because writing my life story doesn't say where my defects were. But I did it. I worked with my sponsor a little bit on it, and my sponsor didn't think that that was the way to do it. She said, but if you heard that, go ahead and do it. And so I went ahead and did it. It wasn't as opening and revealing to me as was answering questions. Well, my sponsor and I sat down with the autobiography, and for me, I didn't feel that I got as much out of it. What it did help me to do was to remember what went on, because there were a lot of blank spots. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's something that's very important for Al-Anons to recognize, is that we have blackouts too, only we weren't drinking behind it. And the longer I'm in program, the more things are revealed to me where I suddenly remember things that went on that I didn't remember before, because there was a lot of insanity behind the disease of alcoholism. And I was one of those crazy Al-Anons. You know, if my husband wasn't home and I came in the house, that was a perfect opportunity to go bottle hunting. And so I would go on this frenzy of hunting for bottles. I was probably in the program several years before I remembered the behavior that came behind those bottles, which was stacking them up on the counter and waiting for him to see how much he'd been drinking, and then getting angry and marching out the front door and standing in my front yard throwing the bottles at his truck. You know, in our neighborhood, they knew there was alcoholism, not by his behavior, but by mine. And there was a lot of crazy things like that that went on. And I think there's something about our bodies that blocks out a lot of that behavior. And it's important for me that I recognize that just because I didn't remember everything didn't mean I was bad or that I was trying to hide it from anyone. What it means is, as I've gotten healthier, more and more of these things have been revealed to me. And it's through these steps that I get to continue to look at myself, to look at my behavior, to recognize when I do something today, if it feels funny, then I have to really look at it, because what that tells me is that I'm reverting to old behavior, and that I have to not be in old behavior, because I've learned new behavior today. Any other questions? Yes, Faith.
Yes, ma'am. I had a very difficult time sorting out everything. So my sponsor had me, I must have thrown away 50,000 papers. I was getting angrier and angrier. So she gave me the AA inventory where I could just write, I think it's page 65 in that Alcoholics Anonymous book, just kind of hit on basic things. And then that gave me the courage to look at Blueprint for Progress. And then I thought, okay, this is okay to sort this out. So that helped me.
Yeah. Whatever helps you do it, use it. You know, I hear a lot of people saying, well, it's not conference-proof literature. Tell me when you started doing your fourth step in the meeting. It's a personal inventory. You can use anything that you want to use, anything that works for you. Now, I'm not saying everybody run out and buy a big book, or everybody run out and buy this, or everybody run out and copy this. What I'm saying is, use what works. The big book was written before we were. I have used the big book on many things. My own personal opinion for Al-Anons is that this book works. I've seen the existence of this working with people that I sponsor. And it's just amazing to watch the growth and recovery. And so I do recommend this book more so than a lot of the others. And this one approaches that asking of simple questions. Can you do this? Or how about this? How honest can you be with yourself? Those are very good questions to start with. And we didn't have this a few years ago. I don't think we had this book when you were doing that before. And I think that this book far outreaches this one. And in fact, this one's going to be rewritten. I don't know how soon, but I know that they're going to rewrite it. Any other questions?
In this path of recovery, do you suggest that you do like concept one, step one, and position one, and then two, two, and two?
No, I don't. I believe it's very important to get into the traditions and the concepts. But most people coming in don't have a clue what the traditions and the concepts are. They first need to get a handle on the steps. Once you've got a handle on the steps, then you're ready to go further. I personally do study traditions and concepts. I have a concepts meeting that meets in my home. And once a month, there's a group of us that come all from all over Northern California. And that's all we do is study the concepts. But as a general rule, someone who isn't in service at the district or area level, they don't even know what the concepts are. It takes time. If you start flipping steps, traditions, concepts, you're going to lose them on the traditions and the concepts. Well, what they need to do is their own personal recovery first. That's the steps. When you go into service, working with the group and the district, you want to get the traditions added. When you start going a little further, you want the concepts added. And I think all three of them are important and essential. But starting out, stick with the steps. Get yourself some recovery under your belt before you try going into the traditions and the concepts. Yes?
Hi, Chris.
Hi, Chris.
I've heard people mention that they do a four-step on a specific issue that they're having trouble with in their life, whether it be someone they work with or someone they live with. I'd like to know what your opinion is on that with regard to just basically doing a moral inventory of ourselves. Does a four-step actually work?
Yes, it does work. And yes, I do take spot inventories on specific topics. I'll give you an example. When my son got his DUI, he called me to bail him out of jail. And I said, son, I'm going to have to call you back. I couldn't give him an answer. And what I did was I sat down and I took an inventory of the pluses and the minuses and what had gone on in our lives. Then I called my sponsor at 2 a.m. And I said, this is what's going on. This is what I've done. I shared it with her. And I shared my feelings about it because I wanted to be sure that I wasn't continuing to enable my children. And she agreed with me that I could bail him out. And so I bailed him out. And then I waited a couple of days and I called him and I said, we need to talk. And I said, you need to recognize that this was the first and only time I will ever bail you out of something like this. If it ever happens again, you need to have somebody else lined up to bail you out. And I was very clear with him. And we talked about different steps that he needed to take. And he took those steps. And he ran into what I call Eskimos because I told him not to get it. He was in Georgia, and I told him not to get an attorney from the north, to get one from Georgia. And he ran into an Eskimo who said the only way he'd take his case is if he went to 3 AA meetings a week and he went into therapy and one of these therapy places that he gave him the names of. And he checked out all three of them. All three of them required that he go to 3 AA meetings a week. Because of the time that it took to get this resolved, for 18 months, my son had to be in 3 AA meetings a week. You know, and that's a God thing as far as I'm concerned. But before I could go there, I had to first take that personal inventory about it as to what was my part and what could I do and talk to my sponsor about it. I've had several situations come up in my life where I've had to sit down and take an inventory about that particular situation. Because I immediately go to blaming me, it's my fault. And the way I keep from doing that is by sitting down and taking an inventory and then calling my sponsor and talking to her about it. And I'm very fortunate. I can call my sponsor anytime, day or night. She's a night owl, you know. And we've always been able to do that with each other. And it's really wonderful to have that kind of relationship. I think long-term sponsorship relationships are very important. I got my sponsor the first week I was in program. And I've got 24 years in now, and I have the same sponsor today. So she knows me from when I was a crazy nut walking in the doors to where I am today. Still a little bit of a crazy nut, but... It's wonderful to have that history, I can't put anything past her. I can't excuse my behavior because she knows me. She knows me very, very well. And I can't say enough for long-term sponsorship. It's very important because you have that one person that knows everything there is about you and loves you anyway. And that's a real important aspect. Other questions? Yes.
Hi, Paula.
Hi, Paula.
How do you deal with a newcomer yet? She's so afraid to share both her stepdads. She says, I don't know if I want to tell you all that stuff. And, I just try to encourage her and tell her that, it's okay. And there won't be any problem about it. I'll just also write over, stand up for you, stand up for you. And she's very reluctant to ensure.
I have not really dealt with that situation because before I accept sponsoring anyone, I sit down and I talk to them thoroughly about who I am and what I am and what I expect when I'm sponsoring someone. I do not sponsor anyone who is not willing to do all 12 steps. And that's discussed before I even say yes that I'll sponsor them. I discuss things about going to meetings, that I expect to see them in at least two of the meetings I attend a week. I mean, there's things like that because I don't have time to chase sponsees down. And that's not my job. My job is to sponsor them and help them to work the steps and get good, solid recovery. And I love my sponsees to death. They're wonderful. But before I say yes to sponsoring anyone, I make sure that that groundwork is done because without that groundwork, they don't know what's expected of them either. They don't know that they're expected to work all the steps unless you say, this is part of the thing that I expect to be asking. Because that's a part of recovery. You don't get recovery unless you go into meetings on a regular basis. And as far as I'm concerned, anyone that I sponsor, I expect to see them in meetings. And usually if I don't see them in a couple of meetings, they're on the phone to tell me why they weren't there. Or they're on vacation or there's something like this. And I don't think I'm a hard-nosed sponsor because I know that my sponsees just love me to death. And I love them too. But I think that in this program, we need some ground rules, too. We can't just go out there willy-nilly and be willy-nilly with people. This is a life-saving recovery program. And to me, it's very serious and very important that I make clear where I am. I don't get in there and run their lives. That's not my job. But there are certain expectations that go along with me being someone's sponsor. More questions?
Just one more. How often do you expect them to call you?
I don't set up a timetable on how often they have to call me because I see my sponsees every week. They call me when they're ready to sit down and talk about something. They call to make an appointment, and we sit down and we talk about something, whatever it is that they have going on. They may call me late and say, Marilyn, I really can't talk right now, but do you have time tomorrow so that we could talk between this time and this time? I say, sure, if I have that time. If I don't, I say, no, I'm going to be gone. How about this time? And we negotiate what's a good time. That they can call me anytime they want. When there's difficult things going on, they call more often. I have a lady that I sponsor right now whose husband is dying of the disease of alcoholism. And it's very difficult for her, and it's very hard. And sometimes she calls me every day, and sometimes she doesn't call me for 3 days. And it's perfectly all right. And I'll be there for her, and she knows that. Other questions? I'm kind of throwing this out to you because this is your meeting. I don't know what you want to know, but if I have the answers, I'll give it to you. But you have to let me know what it is that you want to know. What is your purpose for getting here? Is there some specific thing about the fourth step that you want to know about? Whatever that is, I'll try to answer to the best of my ability. No questions, Blake? You know that already, huh?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, if there's no more questions...
Well, I have a suggestion, only because for me, when I start doing something, I learned the difficulties of the questions kind of as I went through. Do you think it would be possible to, especially the parents in inventory, that we could go through the first few of the parents in inventory and ask the questions to those?
Mm-hmm.
That
the first one is, am I willing to be honest with myself, what stands in my way? So if there's anybody that has specific thoughts, suggestions, or questions on that. Well, I think we need to go back even before that first paragraph, where it says, as we begin to consider the questions below, we need to remember to keep it simple and pray for guidance and courage. The following are not all inclusive, but rather point to a beginning. In preparing to take an inventory, am I willing to look honestly at myself? What stands in my way? Have I sought help from my higher power, my sponsor, and other Al-Anon members? What suggestions have I tried to see if they might work? Do I understand the spiritual principle of an inventory? What does searching and fearless mean to me? What does a moral inventory mean? And those are all real good questions to put you right in touch with where you're going with this. And that's why I made copies of these, because I find that all of these are very, very helpful. I have found that not only doing it myself, but working through it with one of my sponsees just opens all kinds of things up for both of us. It forces me to continue to look at myself. So I would strongly suggest that you take the first set of questions out of this book and start working. And you're going to find things open up for you. That's what I found, and that's what I found that other people have going on. Does that kind of answer what you wanted, Mary?
Yeah, obviously.
Almost all of the questions are pretty open. Like, how am I tolerant? Am I open to another's point of view? Do I listen in meetings and accept that others have needs different than mine? How am I trustworthy? Do I pay my bills? Am I prompt? Do I fulfill my commitments? Do I act responsible in my job? How can my family and friends depend on me? Those are all pretty general. Yes, Chris.
When I did my first four step, I too used a guide that was given to me by my sponsor that was not Cal approved, but it was a question. It asked about thoughts and traits and favorites. How are you tolerant? How are you tolerant? I just started writing, and I filled up a notebook, and it took me probably a couple of months to complete it. But that was the best way for me. I didn't know where to start. I didn't know what to look at. I was probably a program less than 6 months, but I knew I had to address those issues. And that worked really well for me. I just started writing, and the things that I wrote, I couldn't believe, but I had forgotten that, like you said.
Yeah.
I didn't even remember I had forgotten. I mean, it just flowed, and it was very helpful. And I did use it, and I looked back at it, and I think, wow, I was scared.
Yeah. When I look at this, I look at some of the things I wrote in the beginning, and I go, "Oh my God, that's real sick." And you know, I'm fortunate that I had a sponsor that started me working the steps right away and pointed out how important it was for me to work the first three before doing the fourth, so that I could get some recovery in the first three steps so that I was prepared to do the fourth step. And I can't say that enough. And, you know, I have found that whatever tool I use to get the job done is going to work. If it isn't sufficient for me, I'm going to find another tool later on that's going to help me go through and thoroughly complete this. Now I got four going. There's someone back there that I haven't heard from yet. Yes?
My name is Stephanie.
Hi, Stephanie.
And just that Mary brought up his first question from her parents. Would it be possible for you to share your feelings on the last three?
Okay. That would be, the first one would be, do I understand the spiritual principle of an inventory? I certainly do. And I didn't understand that when I did my first inventory. But today I do. I understand that everything I do in the way of inventorying my own personal experience is very spiritual. Because what that does for me is that opens me up to a God of understanding, and it helps me to build the trust that nobody's going to get me around doing this inventory. That God is my higher power who is going to walk me through whatever it is that I'm doing, not only in the fourth step, but any of the other steps. What does searching and fearless mean to me? To me, I have to compare it to the first inventory I did. In that inventory, I was very fearful. And I was trying to search, but I kept getting blocked because I was so fearful. And so being able to do a searching and fearless inventory means that I trust that God is going to take care of me no matter what. As a result, I do not need to be fearful. And when I reached this point, I had to say that out loud to myself, that I didn't need to be fearful because God was taking care of me no matter what. And that was real important to me. What does a moral inventory mean? To me, that means that I don't sit down and write all of the immoral things I did. What it means is that I'm honest and trustworthy in everything that I do in relationship to this inventory. And that I'm honest and I'm truthful. And I don't have to be afraid of it anymore. I don't have to be afraid that I'm going to be judged as being less than because I did this and such or that and such. You know, I am who I am. I have made a lot of mistakes. That doesn't mean I have to continue to do those same kinds of mistakes today. Does that help, Stephanie? And now we have a whole bunch of other questions over here. Willie, your hand was up.
Hi, my name is Willie.
Hi, Willie.
I'm an LLT sponsor, and I was just wondering if it would be proper to be a sponsor of one of the LLTs.
Yes, it would be. I was an LLT sponsor for 10 years. I am still in touch and sponsor people that I sponsored back then. I have kids that I sponsored who show up on my doorstep with their wife and four kids. And all I can do is just stand there and the tears flow, you know, because I'm so thrilled that they're there. And some of them are still in program today, some aren't. There was a young lady that I sponsored in LLT, and when she went away to college, she went to another state. She was gone for 4.5 years. And when she came back, she called me and she said, I'd like to sit down and talk to you. And so we sat down and we talked. And she said, I know that you used to be my sponsor. I'd now like to formally ask you to be my sponsor in Al-Anon. And, you know, to me that was just an absolute thrill. But yes, I know a lot of sponsors who have sponsored kids that are in their meeting. But what's real important is that the other our teams in the meeting don't get to thinking that that person is special, that you're favoring that person over someone else. So it's a real fine line to walk.
Yeah. When I took over 2 years ago, I was 20 minutes to start working on steps. And they were not willing to do that. And now they started a new meeting, and they all took a hope to make it a step study meeting. And now that they started, they're all scared to death because they don't have sponsors.
So send them to Al-Anon meetings or take them to Al-Anon meetings and have them find someone that they can talk to. Because you can't sponsor them all.
Right.
You can sponsor the meeting, but you can't sponsor them all.
I just wondered, like you said, you know, if I sponsor them or two, it's going to be like showing favoritism or something, and I don't want
to
do that.
Yeah, you have to be real careful on that fine line. Paula, did you have your hand up again? No, it was, you had your hand up.
My question is more, I don't have a sponsor, I've been in this program a few months. And how do you, I mean, are you supposed to find a sponsor if you know already did their fourth step? Or how would they be able to help you? They have another question.
Well, one of the things that I suggest is that you go to a lot of meetings and you listen to what people have to say. And when you can see someone who seems to have a lot of recovery, start talking to them on a one-to-one. Find out where they are. Find out how they dealt with the fourth step. If you find out they didn't do the fourth step yet, maybe you need to move on to find somebody who has done the fourth step. But get to know them. Listen for people who say things that you recognize as real recovery. And then make it a point to talk to those people. And go to a lot of different meetings. I was fortunate, the first meeting I went to was where I found my sponsor. That doesn't happen always. So just keep going to lots of meetings, talk to people. If somebody says something that you like, go up and talk to them afterwards. Make it a point to talk to them. One, you'll get to know a lot of people, and two, you'll get to know what you don't want. So that when what you do want comes along, you'll be able to recognize it. Okay?
That's kind of the same question I was going to ask, but to me, I never had a desire not to have a sponsor, although I was lucky to find one early on. And I thought, what would be the reasons that someone would not want to do that with a sponsor? Would it be because they're not really trusting and ready to reveal yet? Or is it mainly a thing where they just don't have a sponsor, and if they didn't have a sponsor, they could, you know, look for someone just to do the steps with, or, you know, they can handle it that way then, or...
I can't get into anyone else's head as to why they don't or why they do, you know. All I can say is this is what's worked for me. And as I say, I was very fortunate. I found my sponsor the first week. And I went not because I was having any problems, but because I wanted to get my mother-in-law educated. She only went to one meeting. I continued to go for her, but I got a sponsor the first week. I don't know why it worked that way, but it worked that way. And the woman that I picked happened to have more time in program than anyone else in the room. I didn't know that when I asked her. I mean, there were a lot of, you know, it's a real God thing on how this happens, and it comes from just trusting that God's going to take care of you no matter what. And there were some more questions back here. Where'd they go?
I have a
question. Sure.
On your handout on page 51,
you
talk about
Which question was that?
It would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on page 51 in the handout. Do I resent places or things?
why and what is my product in it? I know maybe that's a concern, but I'm trying to place a resentment of slavery and things.
Well, for me, what I found is there are places where things happened that I was really uncomfortable with. And I may not catalog it immediately as a resentment of a place or a thing, but when I get back into that place or those things, I am immediately reminded of the bad things, and what's important is that those things come out in my inventory so that I can recognize what is it that pushes my buttons. Because there are things in all of us that people will say some silly thing, whatever it is that pushes my buttons, I react. That's part of getting in touch with who I am. And that's covered in the four-step inventory. Does that help?
Yes. Thank you.
Chris, did you have a question?
I've had people mention to me that while they're doing their four-step, it hurts too much. It's too painful. They can't get through it because of that. It brings up too many past issues. How do you address that for someone to help them get through those, if you can?
Well, I think first and foremost, they have to develop a relationship with their higher power. Because this fourth step is a very spiritual thing. And if you don't develop a relationship with your higher power and trust that God's going to take care of you no matter what, how in God's name can you do a fourth step? Because you're stuck in that place of fear. That's where the pain comes from, is from the fear. Does that help? So now, we've got a lady in a yellow.
I'm Pat.
Hi, Pat.
My question is going back to sponsorship. I'd like to know your thoughts on should a lady be a lady sponsor? Should a man have a man sponsor? What are the disadvantages for a lady to have a man sponsor or a man sponsor?
Well, the first thing I would recommend that you read is the Al-Anon pamphlet on sponsorship, which covers that very thoroughly. I have some experiences, because my opinion has always been that men sponsor men and women sponsor women. And a few years ago, there were three men that had asked me to be their sponsor. And I had said, no, I don't sponsor men. And what they said was, well, can I at least call you till I get a sponsor? And I said, yes, you can. And listen as I do in meetings, I suddenly heard these men start talking about, they had talked with their sponsor about that's and such and that's and such, and I'm seeing this squirming because I knew that they had talked to me about that. And so I went running to my sponsor and I said, this is what happened, and I don't sponsor men. And they're saying that I'm their sponsor and I have never agreed to be their sponsor. And my sponsor just looked at me and kind of smiled, and she says, I guess God's telling you who's in charge. And so I let go. I continued to talk to them. They never asked me to be their sponsor again, but they continue to use me as a sponsor and treat me as a sponsor. And I just kind of let go and did my thing, like I usually do. Today, all three of those men aren't in my life. All three of them happen to be dual members, and they're practicing their other programs, and I don't see them around Al-Anon much anymore. And the issue just kind of went away. But I really believe that it's very important for men to sponsor men and women to sponsor women. I have a principle that I do, like, there's a lot of men that come up to me and ask me, how do I get a sponsor? And we talk about that. And I remember that they asked me, and the next time I see one of the guys come in that I know has some solid program, I'll go and get that guy, and I'll say, John, this is Bill. Talk to each other. And walk away. You know, and it's amazing how often they will connect up. There's one man that I know that has two little girls. His wife is still actively drinking. They're in the process of separating and going back together and this kind of thing. And he had asked me this question, and about 3 weeks later, a guy that doesn't come to that meeting walked in the door, and I know this man very well. I've known him because I sponsored both of his kids in Alateen, two little girls whose wife was actively drinking. They eventually ended up getting a divorce. And so I put the two together, and I said, talk to each other. And I walked away, and about 3 weeks later, this guy came up to me, and he said, I want to thank you for introducing me to my sponsor. Yeah. I never said, you know, this is a guy that will be good for you for a sponsor. I just introduced them to each other, and I said, talk to each other, and walked away. I believe it's real important for women to be with women and men to be with men, because being a sponsor is such an intimate relationship. It frequently is almost as intimate as being married. And sometimes I listen to the things that my sponsees say, and I know how hard it was for them to say it. And I also know if they were being sponsored by a man, that things could get into difficult situations, which is not what we're here in Al-Anon for. We're here in Al-Anon to get some recovery. So yes, I do have the opinion that men sponsor men, women sponsor women. Next questions.
Well, I had a question. I kind of thought it over. Would you sponsor, or would it be a personal thing, would you sponsor someone that didn't have any belief in God?
Don't know, the situations never come up. But I think it would be pretty hard for them to work a program of recovery without a relationship with God. Although there's a young man who's coming to our meetings now who is real serious that there is no God and there is no understanding of God. And he keeps coming. He's obviously hearing something because he's been coming for 3 months. And I have to relate back to myself. In the beginning, I did not believe in God. I did not believe in a higher power, because if there were God, he wouldn't have let happen what happened in my life. So I had no reason to trust or believe in God. When I got into the third step, and I told my sponsor I couldn't do the third step, because I didn't believe in God. And she said, well, have you tried acting as if? And I said, I can't do that. That's being phony. And she said, no. She said, if you're acting as if, you're acting as if God is taking care of you no matter what. And if you do that, I can almost guarantee you that you're going to have changes. Because I didn't believe in God when I came. And this is what I was told to do, this is what I did, and today you know where I am. And I said, yeah. And so I did that. And I did that for about 3 months, and I don't know when it changed, but it changed. So I try not to get into judging who's got the right God, or who doesn't have the right God, or who has or doesn't have a God. Because I know I didn't when I came in. And it changes with time. Other questions? None? Did everybody get answered what they wanted answered? Has everybody got tools now to go home and do a 4-step? I hope so. Well, I'm going to turn it back to you, Beverly. Thank you, Marilyn. And thank you, everybody.